theoldorchard.com.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
I'm good, and Rick Green was a great defensive defenseman.
Sure
they
was.
They don't really have those anymore.
Yes, they do.
Where?
Who's the best defensive defenseman? If they had a trophy, because they'll give the Bobby Orr trophy to the, you know, the... You know, the Bobby Orr trophy should go to the best defenseman. Who is the best? Give me your three nominees for the new trophy named after Rick Green or Rod Langway.
Yeah, that'd be both of them. Name it the Langway Green trophy.
Langway. Who are the best three defensive defensemen?
You know who's got an amazing plus minus over the last 3 years? And the only reason I know it off the top of my head is because I just did the final. Matt Niskanen is a plus 107. Over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
I know, that's what I'm telling you. What's Brian Dumoulin? He's won back-to-back Stanley Cups as a shutdown defenseman.
Who's the best defensive defenseman in the NHL?
Do you know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah, but I don't like the whole plus-minus thing.
No, but what about Brian Dumoulin? He's won two back-to-back Cups. He didn't win it this year, but on the number one pairing shutdown defenseman.
He's not the best shutdown defenseman in the NHL.
Well, I know,
but you're trying to think on your feet here, and you're thinking about the draft, and you're thinking about free agents, and so you're not really thinking.
So
and I understand
who you
that.
Think are the three best defensive defensemen?
Shea Weber is one of them. I would say Shea Weber in terms of shutdown defensemen.
Well, do we have a game minimum that you have to play?
No. Well, I'm not saying he would be a nominee this year.
You know who I think now that you bring it up, Mattias Ekholm.
Okay.
Nashville.
Yeah. You guys haven't said anything. You're thinking too.
Well, I kind of want to take the offensive side away.
Yeah, take the offensive side away, for sure.
It's kind of like picking the Selke trophy winner.
Yeah, but the Selke is not what it was intended to be, you know?
Well, it's getting back closer to it, though, I think.
How about Vlasic and Suter?
Those are good. Vlasic, especially.
Yeah, Vlasic is probably the most underrated. Ryan didn't have a great year. Injuries obviously played a role in it. He's very good in the shutdown, though. There's no question he's very good in the shutdown.
See what you started with Rick Green?
That's why I brought it up. How many of them are there? You see, it takes a little time. If there were a ton of them, we'd be able to answer the question.
I'm hesitating to move on because I think Sean is going to blurt something out just as I move on.
Sean.
Yeah, but the one I'm going to blurt out might win the Norris is Victor Hedman. He's incredible in his own zone still.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking
but
about.
But I understand. Yeah. That's my point.
Strict defensive
but
defenseman.
He can compete with the best of the defensive defensemen. That's my point.
Yeah, but that's not my point.
In the seventh game, but... We move along.
Yeah, we move along to... did you get a chance? I'm sorry, I'm doing this on the air. Probably should have warned you.
No, do it.
Nick Boynton, did you read the piece?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
I've been doing draft work.
Okay. So Nick Boynton, very, very compelling piece.
Yeah.
And he was on with Tony Marinaro on the Montreal Forum right off the top of the show this morning. And I just want to play you a couple of clips. And one will really resonate with you.
Yep. I think a lot. Not as much maybe as other leagues. I think they're doing a good job with the drug issues. But it definitely goes on. Finally, you get to the NHL and you want to enjoy it, but it was over before it began for me. I was miserable within 3 years, you know, and it was just tough sledding. Every day was tough, and I just didn't know, you know, I wasn't strong enough to do anything about it at the time. And I had an NHL trainer just tell me that I looked like I was doing better and I'm probably okay to come off my antidepressants in the middle of the year and just stop giving them to me. Like, that's the kind of medical treatment we're getting. We get lots of it, but it doesn't mean it's any good or it makes any sense. Everything in my power that the union and the NHL has laid out as far as treatment to get some relief, and it's just not, they're way off base. They're just not even close. You know, and it's embarrassing. If it wasn't for where I ended up, my last team with the Philadelphia Flyers and Paul Holmgren, like I said in the story, I think things would have been a lot different. He one GM really hurt me, and then the other GM saved me. So it sort of all works out in the end.
Again, Nick Boynton, read the piece in Players Tribune. You can go to our podcast page at tsn690.ca, hear the whole conversation. But he only played 10 games at the end of his career with the Flyers.
Yeah, but it was Paul. I've seen that. I worked with Paul, and you know, he had a lot of demons too, and he'd be the first person to tell you that. But he lived to tell about it because he went and got help.
Right.
And he got a lot of it. And one of the things that really helped him, Brian Burke really helped him a lot. The National Hockey League really helped him a lot. And then Bob Clark and the Philadelphia Flyers really helped him a lot. So a lot of people stepped up, you know, to try to help Paul. And Paul accepted the help. And, you know, he's doing fantastically well as a human being and also as a hockey executive. He really has done a great job. He's the one that really went to bat for Ronnie Hextall's plan down in Philadelphia, and it was basically a rebuild. We're going to rebuild this thing, and we're going to go with an unproven coach. But my son played for him in North Dakota. This is what Ronnie told Paul, and he's a good coach, and we're going to go with him, and that's what they did. And they're trending, as I've told you for the last 2 years, they're trending up, and they're going to continue to go up because they've done a real good job, and Paul's a big part of that.
Yeah. Paul Holmgren has serious drinking issue, correct?
Yep.
Yeah, and he's been... been sober for decades now.
Over 25 years.
Yeah.
He's been sober over 25 years.
This morning on the morning show.
When you break through the numbers and you do the statistical analysis, what you find out is he's right there with Jack Eichel. In many categories, he's right there with Austin Matthews. So, you know, just because the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, put a premium on Austin Matthews, first pick overall, star center, all of those things, you know, that maybe doesn't mean to Mitch Marner and his people that he should have to take a considerable discount.
Interesting decision coming up. Obviously, that's an understatement when it comes to some young players. In your own mind, can you wrap yourself around those numbers for Mitch Marner? $9 million a year, maybe?
No. That doesn't mean he doesn't deserve it because he's tremendously good. But, you know, again, this is early on in his career to be getting that kind of stuff. So, we'll see. I would say this. They've got some pressing issues that they're going to have to decide on in terms of internal cap. And that's why I was really surprised, again, with – and it's, this is not a knock on their present-day management group, not at all, because I want to give those guys a chance and never prejudge them, and I'm not going to. But Lou Lamoriello was the doctor of the internal cap. When he had Scott Stevens and Marty Brodeur, Joey Nieuwendyk, he basically had a cap before there was a cap. And he decided how he was going to ferret out his money over time. And Scotty Niemeyer was part of that as well. So he was, I mean, that's where I was a little bit surprised that they decided not to keep Lou there in Toronto and move along. But this is going to be the pressing. This is how I believe part of how this management team will be judged in Toronto going forward is how do they manage the cap and how do they manage the young players in terms of contracts.
Pierre, I look at that Toronto situation and I just use an example of Montreal, but other teams, how much do they watch the situations of other teams and know that they may have an opportunity to jump on something because they have these RFAs that are going to sign long term and they can maybe steal another player or sign one of these RFAs that have to be traded?
Well, everybody's got their own opinion on how to do it, so I don't know how they're going to do it. I haven't spoken with anybody in the Toronto organization about it, but I would say that you're always watching and evaluating, but you've got to read it correctly. You know, Chicago learned a lot after 2010, and I think people learned a lot watching Chicago after 2010. They basically had to dismantle their team and go through some, you know, not so pleasant times, even though they were a playoff team, until they won their second cup. And then obviously they won their third cup, but they learned a lot after 2010 about cap management and how to do things. They learned a ton.
Pierre, Mark Hunter, his name has been linked to various organizations, perhaps rejoining Lou Lamoriello. I've seen Montreal. I don't know if they have an opening for somebody else in the front office, but wherever he goes, what is somebody going to get in Mark Hunter?
An old school talent evaluator. He's boots on the ground. It's what I've been telling you for years. All of a sudden, he's become a cause celeb. He's a real good scout. He put together amazing junior teams in London. Sure, they had the budget to go out and get high-priced players like John Carlson or Patrick Kane. You know, they had the wherewithal to do it. But they did it, and you can't argue with players coming out of London. The players coming out of London are really refined and very good and more pro-oriented. Part of that is Mark. Part of that is his brother Dale. They've done a fantastic job as an organization there, and Mark's an old-school hockey scout. That's what he is. And I'm not. I don't know because I haven't spoken to Mark about it, but I'm not sure there's a lot of analytic stuff going into his decision-making.
Old-school.
So heading into the summer, and I'm not really thinking about the draft necessarily. I'm thinking more about trade targets and free agency. Do you have a board, so to speak? Do you have specific targets, players that are about to become UFA that you might want to target? Do you have a kind of a board of your own needs and you try to match the two? Do you also have a board with trade targets? Like, how does that work when you're looking at who you might be out to acquire to supplement your team and help your team?
Organizational strength and weaknesses. 5-year plan, 4-year plan, where are we in terms of overall depth, who are the top prospects for the other teams, who are available, who might be available, who might not be signed as an RFA, who might, you know, be a UFA that's under the radar. I think one of the better UFAs under the radar that won't cost you a lot of money is Luke Shen. And, you know, people didn't watch Arizona a lot. I get it. They weren't a very good team. But I think if he's signed at below $1 million a year, on a 1 or 2 year deal, and you're playing him in the 5-6 hole somewhere in there, you're going to get a player that if you need a depth defenseman, you're going to steal that guy. Those are the kinds of things I would be looking at. The high price guys, everybody knows. The problem is that sometimes you just can't afford it. But also, teams make mistake on the big name players because the guy might be losing a step, or the guy might be losing his hands. Or the guy may have had too many injuries, and he's just not the same player. He doesn't have the same robust mentality. But I think the biggest thing when you're evaluating your team, organizational strength and weaknesses, and just work off of that going forward.
Well, Pierre, I'm staring at one of those boards that Frank Saravelli put together at TSN.ca of the top 50 UFAs, and Tavares is 27. So I'm not even looking at any player with a 3 under their age, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm going down, and it's a guy that you talked about. In addition to scoring and help down the middle, the Canadians need some help on the left side of the defense. He just won a Stanley Cup with the Washington Capitals. He's unheralded. You specifically pointed him out early in their run. Michael Kepney. What do you like about him?
Consistency. He really was well coached, both in Chicago by Ulfie Samuelson and then in Washington by Todd Reirden. And I watched his growth, especially in Washington. He was receptive to coaching. He really stabilized Carlson, who has run around a lot, and Carlson, you know, really wasn't the same without, I'm talking about defensively, without Alsner there for good portions of it. And then I know people in Montreal probably rolling their eyes. Carl Alsner and Carlson were very good together, but Carlson was phenomenal offensively. But Kempney's just, he's played on big ice. He played in Omskover in Russia in the KHL, so he knows big ice. He's a very good skater. He's not shy, plays through injury. Really receptive to coaching. I just think he makes a good more times than not, he makes a good first pass. Sometimes he, like a lot of guys, he tries to get too cute with the puck, but he would be an excellent 4. And if you have him as a 5, it's fantastic.
And I know people are saying, well, don't the Canadians have Schlemko? They have, they have all.
Schlemko's there for power play. That's the two totally different players.
And who's the other one? Jordy Benn, right? They've got 3 guys.
Yeah, Jordy's a penalty killer.
They got 3.
And Riley.
Yeah, but I'm talking over 30, 30 or over. They got 3 guys over 30 on the left side who are, you've got 3 guys in one spot, basically.
Yeah, it's just, again, but bargain hunting is a good thing if you can evaluate the players that still have something left and are prepared to play on 1 or 2 year deal. Like, I think New Jersey, when they signed Brian Boyle, that was a really good signing. Go look at what Brian Boyle did for their team. Talk to the players in the dressing room. That was an amazing signing by New Jersey. Phenomenal.
So it's the player who may be coming off a big salary contract who could benefit from a change of scenery. How do you identify those types of players?
That's part of it, but it's also knowing the player's character. And where do you think he'd fit in your dressing room? You know, Brian cuts a pretty wide swath, Boyle, but he wasn't going to overwhelm anybody in their dressing room. it was still Andy Green's room, but they knew, Andy probably knew, hey, I got this guy in here. He's going to be an ally. He's going to help a lot. Then he's going to make everybody believe that we can do this. And eventually they did do it. They were one of the most improved teams in the league last year.
Sean?
I was just kind of looking up and down that UFA list, and I am very curious, Pierre, about Riley Nash, where he fits into most lineups.
He's a three. He can be a three as a wing or three as a center. He's an elite penalty killer. He got on a little bit of an offensive run this year, like a lot of the guys in Boston. And the biggest thing about Riley is he's going to never take a shortcut. He's going to work all the time. So that would be a very good depth player for any organization, but he doesn't fit in your top six.
But he's the kind of guy that organizations would take a chance to see if he can make that jump.
He's a little past that, I think. I would.
I think that a lot of people are getting seduced by the, what did he score, 15 or 18 goals, or whatever.
He got a little bit of an offensive run this year.
That's not who he is.
That's not his thing at all. It's like, I'll tell you this right now. If William Karlsson scores over 35 goals next year, I'll be completely and utterly wrong. I don't see that from him. I think this was an anomaly. I think he's a really good player, but I don't think he's getting 43 goals again.
I know you've spoken highly of Jeff Skinner in the past, Pierre. Certainly seems like he could be on his way out of Carolina. Still only 26 years old, and he just turned 26 a month ago. We know about the concussion issues, but he's been durable the last 4 years now. I mean, what do you think he can produce, and how attractive a target would he be?
If he can play with an elite playmaking center, he can produce probably 25 to 30 and maybe over 30. But again, the concussion thing is the only caveat on anything about him with Jeff Skinner. He still has his edge control. He still has his hands. He can still score off the rush, which is an important part of the league today. He's not shy. He's not going to go initiate, but he's not shy. He's not afraid to go handle the puck in traffic. But I think with him in particular, his edge control is phenomenal, and he still wants the puck on a stick, and he can score off the rush.
Pierre, could someone who takes a flyer on someone like Rick Nash think that they could be getting Eric Staal and what happened to him?
No, Eric Staal is a centerman. Eric Staal was not in great shape. Eric Staal had been beaten down because Carolina hadn't made the playoffs. Eric Staal needed a different address. He knew, too. He knew when he got traded to the Rangers, I did that series that he played in, he knew that he didn't have it going on, and he had to prove people wrong. PPW, and he did. He went and PPW'd a lot of people when he went to Minnesota. But he's a centerman, and he could beat you in a lot of different ways. Rick Nash is, he's a winger. He's not a center. He needs a center to help him get the puck. And I don't see big number. He's trending downward in terms of numbers. He can, if you need a shutdown guy, you want a depth forward who can shut people down, still play in your power play, and give you some regular season offense, he's a guy that fits. If you're looking for a guy that's going to bring you to the promised land as a top six forward, I would say that's probably not going to happen.
And let's throw out the name one more time. P.A. Parenteau announced his retirement after 10 years today.
Well, what I remember the most about P.A. was him making the 03 World Junior team. That was an amazing accomplishment, and he got to play with his cousin, Pierre-Marc Bouchard. I remember that, and I remember him coming through the ranks. He was originally drafted by Anaheim, but he found a way to, when he played with really good players, he found a way to get pucks to the back of the net. He was always a gentleman. Every time I ever met him, it was all, whether it was at a golf event or whether it was at an NHL rink or even a practice rink, he was always a gentleman. So fond memories, and a guy that worked his way to a 10-year NHL career. And so I'm happy for him that he gets to go out basically calling his own shot. And I don't know, but I have to think one of the better things that happened to him was getting a chance to play with some really high-end players, especially Johnny Tavares.
Sean, we're almost done. Would you like to ask Pierre about Tyson Nash?
No, I'm good.
You got the Rick, you got the Riley. I don't know. Who else is left? Graham Nash, you want to ask him about?
Is it Tyson Nash doing radio in Arizona?
Television.
TV.
TV. In Arizona. He's funny. Yeah. He's very good at it.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun. Thanks, Pierre.
I thought we were doing the draft. You guys are.
We're doing it tomorrow. No, we had to spread this out a little. We have to stretch it out. We're doing the draft. I promise we're doing the draft tomorrow.
No, it's okay. I mean, it's good because it just gives me more time. But I've been going over this pretty good here. It's going to be, I still think trading is going to be a big part of this.